Fellow citizens, it has come to the attention of my benevolent administration that Easter will soon be upon us. This fits in with my plans for world domination. My loyal cohorts have been hijacking shipments of cocoa beans in order to make chocolate Easter eggs. Once placed on supermarket shelves, the eggs, in packaging with my avuncular and smiling face on them, will fly off the shelves. Once opened at home, the eggs will release spores that will make the person's will malleable and open to suggestion. If the Ice Warriors can do it, so can I, but with more style. The populace will then be ready to do my bidding. Until then, enjoy Easter while you can. Here endeth my address.
Woo! Woo! Yeah! President Day! Yay!
Doesn't work with Trump, does he?
Welcome, 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 dear listeners, one and all, to this, the latest in a long line of Staggering Stories podcasts. I'm Crumbly.
I'm Adam.
And I am merely Keith.
Where is everybody?
Well, Jean, I think, is tidying up after the plumber.
Oh, so she's not still melting.
If you get my meaning, yeah. and my beloved
Dirty
is
plumber.
Actually Sicky Pups, is being looked after by Trixie at the moment.
Oh.
Yeah.
Scott, I think, last seen at a beach. This is Steakhouse, we're not quite sure.
But it is actually 50 years since Jaws was released. Perhaps he's trying to recreate.
Probably.
Yeah. Don't think you get many sharks off of Brighton.
No.
Be a bit cold. Yeah.
Lots of bad hats, though.
Lots of bad hats.
Yeah, lots of Kiss Me Quick hats, yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, dear listeners, presidential proclamations besides, it's the news with El Presidente.
Woo-hoo!
Inside number 9!
Oh, yeah.
Dead.
Stage play, Let Loose.
Ooh.
Hold on to your opera glasses as the wickedly witted duo, that almost did me in there, behind Inside number 9, Reese Shearsmith and Steve Pemberton, are unleashing their unique brand of darkly comic chaos with their national tour of Stage Fright. Forget your predictable plots. This is theatre with a twist. Like a Kinder Surprise, where the Tory might just whisper unsettling truths. Following its West End run, Stage Fright is packing its bags, presumably containing various unsettling props, and perhaps suspiciously numbered door, and embarking on a UK tour. So, whether you are a seasoned number 9 in Fictionado, or a newcomer with a penchant for the peculiar, grab your tickets. You just may keep an eye on any suspicious numbered seating arrangements. You never know what theatrical trickery might be afoot. Enjoy the darkness in September to November in such locales as Milton Keynes, Sunderland, Canterbury, Birmingham, Manchester, Woking, Hull, Oxford, Stoke-on-Trent, Liverpool, and Edinburgh.
Ooh. Well, that's the closest one to us.
Woking, I think.
Woking, yeah. I suppose. Yeah, Woking.
Yeah. I have only recently been getting into Inside Number 9. Karen,
I haven't seen it for years. I've saw the first season or so.
Karen got a whole load of DVDs, box set DVDs, for a couple of Christmases ago.
Yes.
And there's quite a few people appear in it.
Oh, yeah. People they got. Yeah. Guest stars, isn't it? They're incredible, yeah.
Is it the same sort of style of Grand Guignol humour?
Oh, yes. It varies.
Yeah, it does vary. They're all inch individual little stories.
Yes.
So it's an anthology series. It's not Royston Vasey.
Yeah. It's different characters each week.
Different characters each week. Some of them are quite lighthearted in a grotesque way. some of them are quite dark.
Ooh. Yeah. They go the full gamut, don't they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And this, as I said, was on the West End. I missed it at the West End, so, yeah, it'd be nice to...
It would be... It's interesting to know who writes what, you know, who's more darker. Do they take turns in writing? And
yeah, I don't know.
Scooby-Doo!
Yeah.
Ooh. Uh-oh.
Those meddling kids back in live action. Jinkies, get ready to pile into the Mystery Machine, because Scooby-Doo and the gang are heading back to our screens in a whole new way. Netflix, that's those butchers, has officially confirmed it's developing a live-action television series based on the beloved Hanna-Barbera cartoon. While details are scarcer than A Ghost at Sunrise, we know that the project comes from the powerhouse Berlanti Productions, the folks behind the Arrowverse, and Warner Brothers Television. It's got a script-to-series commitment, meaning if Netflix likes the script, it's full speed ahead. No word yet on casting or when we might expect to solve mysteries with the live-action crew, but grab your magnifying glass and maybe a Scooby snack, and this sounds like groovy news.
We'll see. Yeah, Netflix, there's a good chance they won't make it beyond season one, but I don't know if they're going to be like the films cast 20-somethings as teenagers, or if they are to go for proper kids. I don't know. Don't know what they're aiming at in terms of an audience.
The original film cast are now far too old.
Oh, good.
I suppose so, yeah.
Even so, having Lindsay said Cardellini that, I think they certainly hit gold with the guy who played Shaggy. The name escapes.
Matthew Lillard,
yeah.
Yeah, he still plays the character now. He does the voice.
Yeah, he does the voice now on the cartoon, because the original voice is no longer with
us. Casey Kasem, he's gone now, sadly, yeah. Quatermass.
Ooh.
New making of book. Prepare for a deep dive into the making of the BBC's groundbreaking 1953 serial that had a nation glued to their probably very small screens. Written by the obsessive, in a good way, Toby Haydock, who apparently has been pondering Quatermass for a whopping 30 years.
Blimey.
This tome promises juicy behind-the-scenes tidbits, forgotten production memos, sneaky peeks into Nigel Neill's personal archives, and interviews so fresh, they're practically still sipping tea in the BBC canteen. Set for release on the 12th of May, this hardback edition sounds like the perfect companion for a rainy afternoon. Who knew that a slightly terrifying tale of astronauts and alien transformations could still generate such excitement decades later? Expect further volumes of other TV serials and also the films.
Considering the time, was it 1953? Sure. And it was quite literally must-watch TV. Places would empty to watch Quatermass, because it was such so different at the time and such an impact on the culture at the time. Massive.
A lot of Doctor Who is quite influenced by it, particularly some of the Pertwee era.
Certainly, certainly the Pertwees.
Yeah, Toby's been talking about making these books for years, literally years. I know that he's spoken about it before, and I know Siobhan was looking forward to them as well, so yeah. A little unfortunate.
Yeah.
Better,
I do remember, I think it was when they did the ITV series. They re-released books of the original Quatermass. I can't remember ever watching the TV series, but I knew that I used to be a fan of the films, which used to come round during the summer holidays on BBC Two. They'd always do a BBC Two would always do a sci-fi season, and there'd always be a Quatermass film in there.
I've seen the films.
Yeah.
Yeah, the last one with Sir John Mills as Professor Quatermass, but I've never seen the actual reboot with David Tennant in it.
Oh, really?
I think I caught the reboot,
I've got it on DVD.
All right.
I don't think you can find the original live version anywhere, sadly.
Yeah.
Because they did fluff one scene quite badly.
I do remember watching it, and I do remember seeing, what's his name?
Sean Gatiss Tennant.
Gatiss.
Yeah.
Picking his nose.
No, okay.
You don't do that on live, did you? No. That was so astounding. He had an itch and was absent-mindedly.
To give it an air of authenticity.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Which I thought was wonderful.
Jason Fleming, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was quite good.
Yeah.
But yeah, they did go back and re-record a couple of scenes, which is the one that ended up on the DVD.
Shame.
It's mostly live.
Yeah.
It was on the DVD, but not entirely.
Shame. I should have had the nerve to release the live one.
Yeah. Well, one of the actors really dried badly.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that was what we were saying, what we was listening to yesterday, you know, live action, covering each other.
Yes.
Anyway, Val Kilmer.
Dead.
The Iceman goeth. I apologise, I am just reading this, I did not write it. The actor Val Edward Kilmer prematurely ejects from life, aged 65.
No age.
No.
Kilmer has hung up his aviator sunglasses and traded his nippleless bat suit for a potential afterlife as the front half of the top secret cow.
Yep.
He surely has the distinction of being not the worst screen Batman, starring in the 95's Batman Forever and handing over to George Clooney. You may know the difficult to work with actor in such films as Top Secret, Top Gun, but sadly not Top Cat, Willow, The Doors, True Romance, The Island of Dr. Moreau, The Saint, Red Planet, MacGruber, Jay and Silent Bob Reboot, and Top Gun Maverick.
Mm.
The only thing I know about this is there is a rumour that, what was the director of the Batman film?
Schumacher.
So at the end of it said, fine, cut, now get that son of a, off my set.
Yeah, a lot
of people. Not the easiest person to work with then.
Yeah, a lot of people found that. I think the Zuckers found that too when he did Top Secret.
Yeah, and the Top Secret was his first...
It was his first role.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. First film role.
Yeah, because Top Secret was 84 and Top Gun was 86. Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's still sad.
It's interesting. So the closer we get to the age, the more we're finding it no age at all.
Yeah, 65. Mm, yeah.
If you, when you were 13, 65 was ancient.
A long way away.
Yeah. Yeah. He had been unwell for a long time. Throat cancer.
Yeah. Because I think the last appearance, Top Gun, was just a physical body appearance. He didn't actually have any lines.
He did, but he had quite a bit of help from AI.
Ah. But any addendums?
No, I'm addendumed out.
I do have an addendum.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, a lot of people are going to sigh and roll their eyes.
Well, excuse me, the people who sigh and roll their eyes are not here at the moment.
Yeah, they died at the Red Wedding.
The official trailer for Tron Ares went up on YouTube yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
And it's already attracted over 10 million hits.
Wow. I must watch it.
Yes, I have not seen that trailer.
Yes, and release date of 10th of October of this year.
Oh. Okay. How does it look? Does it seem in keeping with, the last Tron film?
What has it gone for?
Well, a lot of people said it's more edgier take on Tron. Yeah, with the actual plot of the movie, the music, things like that, really.
Mm, we shall see.
One person sort of pointed out, when I saw the trailer, I had to agree, there's not a lot of blue in it. There's a whole lot of red.
Okay.
Mm. We're going dark and moody.
Well, which means the bad guys have taken over somehow.
Yes. Right. Jared Leto, isn't it? Yeah. We'll see.
We'll have to wait and see.
That's endeth the news.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have been listening to stuff, have we not?
We have indeed.
We have been listening to Doctor Who, The Whispering Forest.
Whispering Forest, why tell the trees?
Pause for music. We have just discovered something, and I think we should apologise. We have apparently reviewed this one before, and the one previous, and the one next.
Back in 2016.
Yeah, it's a long time ago.
Nine odd years ago.
Look, I'm over 60. The memory's fading.
I can't say I remember it at all. So, there we go. Of all the big finishes we've never done, we're doing this one again.
I recently listened to this one by accident a couple of years ago, and it sticks more pertinently in the mind because at the time we were in the middle of COVID.
Yeah, this predates COVID. I say, we reviewed it in 2016 originally.
Yeah, this predates COVID, but it is COVID. Much more pertinent, I think. Let us dive into it.
Indeed.
Following on from last podcast, we have the Dr. Oldnisser. Oldnisser, Tegan
and Turlough.
Tracking down the path of the Rictus syndrome virus, ostentatiously to use the cure, or to test the cure that Nissa's got.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it starts, but we seem to lose track of that pretty quickly.
Pretty tenuous, yeah. That obviously sets up the entire medical theme going throughout. Yes. But otherwise, it's got nothing to do with Rictus at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Apart from maybe some catalyst way back.
But it's no longer relevant to what is going on at the moment.
No.
We certainly stumble across a fractured society.
Mm.
It reminds me quite closely, to a certain extent, of Face of Evil. the
okay.
Fourth Doctor, Leela, yeah. one that introduced Leela.
The mm-hmm. Tesh and the...
Yeah, the Sevateem and the Tesh, because you've got basically one society that's been fractured down the middle, and they're living as two opposing groups.
Yes.
Where the other side, the other group is crypt in myth and legend.
Mm. Mm. In fact, we've really got three groups, not including the Doctor and co.
Yeah.
So we've got, what do they call themselves? The humans.
The survivors.
You've got the takers.
Yep.
And the shades, who are just voices in the wind.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. What is more pertinent about the COVID? The humans are very sterile orientated.
They've got a major phobia against germs and bacteria.
They live as primitive, but they're always cleaning themselves out.
I wouldn't say they're primitive. Well, they have a technological society.
Technology they've inherited.
They've inherited, but they use it more like magic than anything
they
else.
Don't understand the technology. They don't know the purposes of the technology. They're obviously getting cleansers and wipes from somewhere.
Yes.
I can't remember where. And they are continuously using them, but it's all caked in ritual and, symbolism.
Mm.
It's not what I would call a technical society. Mm. They have technical trappings, but it is very primitive.
Oh, it's a very primitive society. As we learn sort of later on in the story, sort of they were left behind.
Yeah.
Because, there's a big medical ship that crashed on the planet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're basically the patients.
Yeah, the patients.
Yeah. Patients and the nurses and maybe a few doctors, but the doctors certainly all died out.
Mm. Yes. All of the originals are gone by this point.
Yeah, all the medical team have gone.
Yeah. They refer to themselves as sister.
Mm. Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, the leader. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing was, on listening to this, Doctor. I mean, it only happened over 100 years, 100 years or so ago. But their society has gone so way backwards in that time.
Yeah, it's collapsed quite quickly.
Oh, good grief, there's a lot of superstition, sort of cleanliness is literally next to godliness.
Well, it's that they are described completely hairless, so they've had all their hair shorn off. And very red and scabby because continuously washing and wiping.
Well, carbolic soap.
I do remember at the period of the height of COVID when you're meant to be washing your hands continuously and constantly, they were turning red and scabrous because the continuous washing and cleaning.
Yeah, it's only dry skin.
Yeah. What's the saying they use? The thicker the skin, the more holy you are or something like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we have on this, what was her name?
Sesha, is it?
Sesha.
Yes. Sesha was the daughter who was the...
Myrtle.
Myrtle, that was it. Who's very much...
Reactionary.
I wouldn't say reactionary, out for herself.
Mm. Oh, yes.
Manipulating. I don't want to get political, but certainly like politics of the day, manipulating themselves so they're in the prime position where they can be egotistically dictating things to other people.
Yeah, I
know
really
what's right. I know what's right for you. Your thoughts on the doesn't matter at all.
Yeah, I found it really difficult to listen to this because of her.
Yeah.
I hated her so much. So I actually started re-listening to it a second time.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get through it a second time. I listened to it all once a week or so ago, then came back to it again.
Yeah.
And only got about halfway through.
It doesn't help with the current political climate, I admit. But she's definitely an obnoxious, arrogant.
Yeah. And you really wanted her to really get a comeuppance.
Mm. Oh, yeah, me to stick
it
in.
But it wasn't satisfying.
No, not as much as you wanted.
Yeah. It's weird how it really brought out the... I just want her to die horribly.
She is...
It raised your hackles a bit.
Yeah. She is a thoroughly horrible, self-centred, conniving little character. We don't like her.
No, we found out that she murdered her lover's sort of former wife.
Yeah.
So she could get in a position, so she could start manipulation.
Manipulating him, manipulating people under him.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
I get the impression she certainly wasn't beyond using sex as for favours and to get people to coerce to her side.
Yeah.
Because there was a couple of lines in there. They were certainly implicated.
Oh, yeah. She quickly jumped into the bed of the leader once she'd gotten rid of the competition, his wife.
And also her second.
Oh, yes. Yeah, there was some implication.
That's what I meant. Yeah. You know, he was besotted with her, and that was used as something to get him to do what she wanted. Mm-hmm. And then we have Sasha, Sister Sasha, who is the leader's daughter. The leader disappears or is taken.
Right at the beginning.
Technically, she's next in line for the throne.
Yes.
Myrtle immediately begins to undermine that.
Yeah.
You get an idea of what the takers are sort of relatively early on in the story.
Yeah.
Now realising I'd heard it before, but... Yeah, years ago. But yeah, it was pretty obvious immediately that they were taking the ill. They were taking people who are on the edge of death.
Yeah.
Yeah, you thought, they're clearly taking them to make them better.
Yeah, they're what remains of the medical droids, the medical staff.
Yeah.
Because you have the whole setup of the life support systems and the base running off of there. And again, slightly like Face of Evil, they're quarantined behind a force field. Because it was looked like a solid rock wall, but it was actually a force field that only the takers could go through because they could signal through, or if somebody had the remains of a taker, could walk through, as Nissa and Turlo do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This may be just me, my sentiments on the matter, but yeah, the people in this are the ones who are sort of left behind on the planets. They reminded me of the spacers from the Isaac Asimov robot novels.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, because the spacers were basically an offshoot of humanity. They had no disease, no viruses and such. And so, obviously, they had a morbid fear of such.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so when the policeman Elijah Bailey turns up on one of the spacer worlds, he's treated like a leper.
Yeah. And then the third and final group is the Shadows.
Shades,
which is a result of the initial crash in some way.
Some multidimensional explosion.
Yeah.
I don't know what drive they had, but it's pretty powerful.
It's detecting marks on the base, the habitat they've got, which is the recycled parts of the original ship.
Yeah, you can see in your mind's eye this working in the Fifth Doctor's era.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's like things like Kimda.
Yeah. Yes.
Similar sort of setup, or even Frontios, although obviously a bit less foresty. But yeah, that similar setup with these groups of survivors and that studio-bound fake exterior.
A flat jungle floor.
Yeah.
Remind my fading memory, Adric, what episode does he turn up in first?
No, it's Turlo in this one.
No, I'm talking about Adric.
Full Circle.
Full Circle, that's right. That's another episode I draw similarities between.
Because religious duty and...
Yeah, well, I should say sort of duties, but...
And also people who have forgotten their...
Their origins, to speak.
Or even vampire mutations, State of Decay.
State of Decay,
similar.
Yeah, it has taken what has become various Doctor Who tropes.
Oh, yes.
But mixed them in a new way. It's an enjoyable story, despite Myrtle. It's an enjoyable story that races along.
Why does she have to be called Myrtle?
You don't stand there and necessarily go, oh, well, this is going to... I recognise this bit, so this and this is going to happen. You don't get that.
Yeah, I did partway through wonder, how's the Doctor going to defeat Myrtle?
Yeah.
She has so many people on her side.
Yeah.
What's he going to do? But of course, the answer is to solve the wider mystery and then...
Remove her power, not defeat her. Just...
Then, plot-wise, something would happen and kill her, which she did.
So overall, despite us doing this before, I thought it was a good story. It carried me along. I got to hate people with a passion.
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah, did a great job.
Yeah, so I mean, sort of, that is, what's the worrying thing about it, sort of how quickly a society can devolve.
Oh, yeah, we're seeing it at the moment.
Who do we have in the cast? So Sesha was Hayley Atwell.
Blimey.
Oh, good grief.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, and Tan was... Narin Barnard.
That name sounds familiar.
He's done a few things, but I know him best from he did We're Take Manhattan with Gillan.
Ah.
And she was playing Jean Shrimpton.
Ah, yes, yes. Yep.
Harry Melling.
That's another familiar name.
Yeah, so he was Dursley.
Right.
His maternal grandfather was Patrick Troughton.
Mm. Yes.
So it's quite an
interesting cast there.
Myrtle was Sue Wallace. I don't know that I know.
No, I can't say particularly. I recognise. She did a good job.
She did an incredible job.
Damn good job, but I don't recognise the name.
So hateful.
It's even the pitch of her voice set my teeth on edge.
Yeah, she's from Juliet Bravo, Bergerac, The Bill.
Ah.
heartbeats, doctors, etc., etc.
Again, one of these jobbing actors that I may not recognise the name, but would recognise the face.
Yeah, probably.
The Vaughan Armstrong of, you know, sort of BBC and ITV police dramas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty solid. It feels very appropriate to the era.
Does end on a cliffhanger.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes, yes.
Leading into the
into Cradle Mara of the Snake. The next... Yeah, the Return of the Mara.
Which we probably won't get to any time soon, because we've got Doc 2 coming back.
Yeah, yeah. That's probably, as we've already done it, it's probably not necessarily a bad thing.
Maybe not. Maybe not, yeah. So next podcast, we will have two new Doc 2s to talk about, I think, if my time is right.
Yeah, yeah.
But a good one to end on for now, for Big
Oh,
Finish.
Yes. Mm, yes.
And you can get it for £4.99.
Oh, that's not bad.
Download only.
That's Yeah, well, it's no longer...
No CDs left.
Yeah, they've sold them all.
Blimey.
I'm sorry, Crumbly, but me and Manor Adam have been out and about.
Ooh.
We have been somewhere.
Gallivanting.
We thought, shall we invite him?
No.
Nah. We have been, over this current weekend, up to London to go to the one-day convention, the Capital Cutaway, that was held... Where was it held?
POSC.
POSC.
The Polish Cultural Centre in the Hammersmith
area,
which I oddly had been to about 25 POSC. Years ago.
For entirely
different reasons. Mm.
So if there are any Polish listeners, you know, sort of Polish people listening, all I can say is, dzień dobry.
Yep. It was a very, very good canteen down the bottom there. Caff, not canteen, caff.
Yes.
You could go outside and did a very nice cinnamon latte.
Okay.
But anyway.
But more importantly, we were there for Doctor Who guests.
Yes.
And we had quite a few.
Quite a few I have actually never seen before.
Yes. This is run by Dwaz.
Yep.
So you know they can get good guests.
Yes.
It started off with Joe Martin.
Yep.
The Fugitive Doctor.
The Fugitive Doctor. Mm.
Then we had what they call Shooty Who panel, which is Steph Diwali, who played Anita in the recent episode, the Christmas special. Gemma Redgrave. See Kate Lethbridge-Stewart. And Susan Twist.
Dun, dun, dun!
She didn't do any dancing there.
No, no.
She didn't come dancing onto the stage like a,
no, thank
a
God.
Former PM.
Yes. Yeah, thank God.
Then we had another solo panel with Anita Dobson.
Blimey.
Angie and Mrs. Flood.
Mrs. Flood.
Is mostly about her career rather than Doctor Who, because she can't really say very much about Doctor Who yet.
Not at the moment,
because clearly she's going to be part of the upcoming season in some way. Then we had Destiny of the Vervoids. So somebody from Destiny of the Daleks, somebody from Terror of the Vervoids.
Yeah, I missed that one.
that was a really good panel. It's Simon Slater and Peter Straker.
Me and Karen came back towards the end at the sound of the laughter coming
it
from
It was
the,
hilarious. Yeah. They were a really good double act, those two. Yeah. And then we had another solo one with Katie Manning.
Blimey.
Always good money.
Mad as a box of frogs.
Yes.
Indeed, and still is. Then Making 60s Who, we had a cameraman.
Cameraman.
From the 60s called Dudley Darby. What a great name. And another great name, Peter Purvis.
Yep. Ooh. He's still with us.
He's still there, and he's a little dodger in his legs.
He's... No disrespect to him, he is now walking like an old man.
He is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he's still in fine form.
Oh, God.
His mind is definitely still there.
Yeah. Yeah, very, very fervent.
He might not be doing any running anymore, but he's still looking pretty healthy. And then to cap it all off, we had the Fifth Dimension, which is Peter Davison and Sarah Sutton.
Yes.
Oh, actually, then they disappeared off just in time not to draw the raffle.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Which, of course...
Who won the raffle?
There were only four prizes.
Yeah, they were good prizes. They were full-up pictures of various Big Finish covers.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, there's one over there.
The Pertwee one.
And another one over your place.
Yeah, there is a number nine over at our place.
So of the four, and they sold nearly 500 raffle tickets.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And of the four prizes, we won two of them.
Staggering Stories picked up two. It's not our fault. We don't do it deliberately. We haven't got our probability manipulator.
Just a spare book of, you know, raffle tickets.
But improbable odds, but really good day.
Great
convention panels there. As I mentioned, the Simon Slater and Peter Straker were hilarious.
Well, so how did they start that? I understand the questions. What do you remember of your time on Doctor Who? Absolutely nothing. Anyway.
Yeah, they spoke about their career in general and stuff like that. They made a lot of jokes at each other's expense. And
apparently the dialogue sort of slipped into the risque.
Oh, yes. Yes, such as.
There was some rather fruity language. there were a few kids in the room, but they didn't care.
Yeah, they just went straight on.
Yep.
It was very, very funny. And Pete Davidson and Sarah Sutton were... On form as ever. Sarah Sutton is definitely slowly taking on the persona of Janet Fielding.
Yes.
She's getting quite a few digs in.
Yeah, she's been taking lessons.
She must have been, yeah.
But
good fun.
Like I said, it was interesting with the Jo Martin, because I think
she's really good.
Is this her first con? It's got to be amongst the first.
Yeah, she did say she'd been...
I know she's been at the Who shop.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I think she said she'd been abroad already for a...
She did Gallifrey last year.
Yes.
Because I've never seen her before, I've got to admit.
No, not in person.
Yeah. It was interesting getting the various background and reactions and going into the secrecy of it.
Yes.
Certainly not necessarily for her first appearance, but certainly the return... Power of the Doctor.
And said, as you were saying, how she even kept it from her son, who's a big Doctor Who fan.
Yeah.
He knew she was in it.
Yeah.
But thought she was just playing Ruth.
Yeah.
Didn't know anything about the twist.
As a part, she kept on saying, got to get this. She finally got a part, and it was brilliant. Yay! Yeah. And then sat down and watched it with her.
Yeah. And then when she did the whole judo or...
Yeah, on the...
Venusian Aikido, whatever it was meant to be.
On the Jadoon.
What's going on here? Yeah.
Yeah, no, so that was good seeing that reaction. Yeah. We also covered a few bits and pieces about her career, which I thought is absolutely wonderful, was being told, get a proper job behind you, which she didn't.
A side hustle, or at least a backup plan.
And
came up a couple of times.
Phoning up her mother, telling her that she's in her favourite show. You know, I got this part in your favourite show. So, guest or recurring character? They're completely unimpressed.
Yeah, just a guest one-off, yeah.
Yeah, except for when she got a gig with the Royal Shakespeare Company, which was, again, being telling the friends that her daughter is now acting for the Queen. That was the only time she got a positive reaction, which was interesting.
Yeah, she was really good.
She was good, yes.
Also, great fun, the trio of Steph Diwali, Gemma Redgrave, Susan Twist, particularly Gemma Redgrave.
We found out that Gemma Redgrave is a giggler.
Yeah.
And there is a certain way you can tell that she's giggling, because there's this very low groan gasp as she draws in breath.
Yeah,
then it goes to the other extreme.
She has a very infectious, rather hilarious laugh.
Yeah. So I thought...
Had Robert Dick, the interviewer, completely lost it, didn't he?
Yeah. I didn't know where that noise come from. So it's sort of, what the hell's going on? And then suddenly this giggle comes out. It was Anita's first gig, wasn't it? Steph.
Yeah.
Yes, playing Anita.
Yes, yeah. Indeed. Yeah, her first convention.
She's been and done a lot of theatre work. Mm-hmm. She's mostly known for theatre work. She spent the last 20 years.
That Doctor was her first TV.
Doctor.
A little bit on film, I think. But
yeah, and she's got another one now coming up. Not a Doctor Who, another TV.
Did she say what it was? I'm not sure.
I can't remember what it was off the top of my head.
Yeah, they were really good. Particularly Gemma Redgrave and Robert Dick, just completely corpsing.
Yeah, yeah. And so she's got a very infectious, very strange laugh.
Yeah, she was in great spirits.
Yeah, you get the feeling that perhaps she's been told off a lot, because she was complaining that she, you know, it should be the person who makes you corpse, not the corpsey.
Indeed. Katie Manning, you want more to say?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Again,
enough said.
Yeah, mad as a box of frogs ever. Yeah. And still not staying still, still all over the stage.
Oh, good grief. Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, Anita Dobson, not quite so funny, but very fascinating and very interesting.
Anita Dobson reminds me of Katie Manning, but down to about five.
Right. Yes.
Yes. If Katie Manning is 11, then Anita Dobson is five. Yeah. You know, there's still the playful element in there, and there's still some of the stories that she came out with.
Yeah.
But she wasn't up all over the stage.
Oh,
everywhere.
Good grief, no.
Yeah, fascinating stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So, well, we've all seen her in action, so we know what she's like.
Yeah.
They didn't talk too much about Doc 2 because, you know.
Yeah, she couldn't.
Couldn't really. No. But lots of fascinating insights about EastEnders and going back to EastEnders.
Yep.
And
yep.
Obviously, Brian May came up several times for obvious reasons.
That's fascinating. What I found fascinating about that is apparently talking to Brian May, and he's there, and you can see the fingers going.
Mm.
And it's not because it's a nervous tick or anything. He's playing music.
Yeah.
He's got music constantly going around his head, and he's strumming to it. which, digressing slightly onto Brian May fan club, but apparently he's always doing stuff, either it's writing music or theses or whatever.
Yeah, he's a keen astronomer.
No, he is an astronomer. He's a genius. Physicist. Yeah.
Nita said he was actually working for NASA at the moment.
Blimey.
Yeah. In some capacity. I don't know why. But it wasn't really about him.
No.
He came up.
I do recall him sort of seeing him on Sky at Night a couple of times.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He used to do that a fair bit back in the day. I don't know about recently. One of the more restrained panels was the 60s Doctor Who with Peter Purvis and Dudley Darby. The interviewer basically did nothing at it, just Peter Purvis.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
No disrespect to him, but Purvis did dominate that because, one, he's used to it. I think it's the cameraman's first
probably
ever convention. So
it's fascinating to hear about how they did it back in the day from an actual technician
in
the BBC. Because you hear it from the actors all the time.
Yeah.
You don't hear so much from people like cameramen.
Dragging what is it, 40-pound cameras around.
You occasionally see writers and directors, but
cameramen? No, you don't get the cameramen.
Not really.
It's fascinating. Really good event.
Yes. And we have the Capitol back in Crawley next year.
Back at the hotel it was at the last couple of times in Crawley, Crown Plaza.
Yeah, it's in May of next year. I've made a note of it in my phone, which I obviously don't have on me at the moment. So
50th anniversary of Dwaz next
year? It is the 50th anniversary of Dwaz,
So, I've already bought my ticket for that.
Yep.
Expensive, though. But it's got to be worth it.
This is it. It is one of the more expensive cons, but as it's in Crawley, we don't have to pay hotel expenses.
No travel expenses.
Yeah. For us, rather being rather smug, it works out as one of the cheapest.
Really good event. I'm glad I went along to that one.
Anyway, dear listeners, if you have any experience of conventions you've been to, or just want to chew the fat, you can email us at show@staggeringstories.net.
Woohoo! We all got two.
Indeed.
Right. Ladies and gentlemen, we now have been watching stuff.
Oh, yes.
There. Watching things.
We have been to the cinema. Mm. And what have we been to see?
Mickey 17.
When I first saw the trailer for this, I thought Red Dwarf.
Oh, yeah. Particularly with him out on the side of the ship.
Yeah.
He wasn't quite painting it.
No, he wasn't quite painting it. But, yeah, it's an interesting little premise. I think the premise has been used in Red Dwarf, one of the later series, the printing people.
Yeah, I wonder which came first.
I don't know.
The book, Mickey 7.
The book has been out for a little while, but the Red Dwarf.
So the Red Dwarf,
The episode from Red Dwarf has been out for a little while. But the Earth, essentially, as we know, is dying, and they've decided to colonize another world. And, of course, this costs the colonists to buy a ticket. It's an exorbitant amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
But you can work your passage as an expendable.
Right.
Expendables are people who do all the lethal jobs, potentially lethal jobs.
Or fatal jobs.
Or are used as guinea pigs of various things.
Yes. You seem to give away all rights.
Yes. They wave over their life, all their rights, and if they happen to die on the trip, then they then get printed out again or cloned again.
And memories, personality uploaded back to the copy.
Yeah, so you get a continuous run of memories.
Yeah.
I have a slight confession to make.
Come on then.
I started watching it with the best of intentions. Yes, but after about 20 minutes, I just thought, no.
Really? Okay.
Okay.
Right. So the book is actually 2022. So it's so a not too long turnaround from book to film.
Yeah.
So yeah, this was after Red Dwarf.
Yeah, a lot. Did after.
Printed Rumours.
Yes.
I think the only scene that made me chuckle slightly was the scene where he's doing a lister and he's outside the ship and he gets his hand cut off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you see the scene inside one of the crew canteens. Areas or canteen or wherever. And you just see this glove-clad hand floating wistfully past the porthole.
Yeah. Yeah.
And well, that was the only bit that made me smile slightly.
I will admit, I watched it at the cinema, so I'm going to sit there and watch the whole thing. Yeah. But I didn't enjoy it as much as I thought I would.
Same. The trailer really set it up to be
more of a comedy.
More of an outright comedy than it actually was.
Yeah.
It's more satirical rather than laugh out loud.
It is.
Sitcom comedy.
Yeah, it is not laugh out loud. It's very dark and black humour.
Yes.
I'm expecting. What's his name?
Ruffalo.
The Hulk.
Yeah, Mark Ruffalo.
I'm expecting Mark Ruffalo next time he leaves America to be impounded somewhere by ICE because his leader impersonation, I can't remember the name of the guy, but it was Trump 280.
Oh, good grief, yeah.
Yeah, Kenneth Marshall.
Kenneth Marshall, yeah. It was Trump in mannerisms and facial expression.
And teeth.
Yeah, it's the jutting out bottom jaw. Not quite slack and drooling, but almost.
He was pretty thick with it.
Yes.
But he had this cult of personality, literally a cult of personality around him.
He was like a TV evangelist preacher.
Yes, which of course is what Trump effectively is.
It was very much, as you said, cult of personality.
Oh, yeah.
It was.
A lot of the people on the ship were there because of him.
Yeah.
He was a failed politician who had somehow got people to rally together to create this ship to go to a new world.
And
with him as their leader, of course.
Even the people who, the lead scientists, the people who were intelligent, didn't have the backbone or the stomach to defy him, approach him, or suggest to him that this may not be the correct course.
Back to current affairs. Okay.
Yeah. And in the course of the story is our hero, Mickey number 17.
Robert Pattinson.
He's the 17th clone so far on this trip. We do get a small plotted history of the...
get the backstory of Mickey 1.
Yeah, very quick flashbacks of the other Mickeys.
Some of them don't last very long at all.
No. When they land on the planet, they find out there is a virus in there that is immigrant to life.
Yeah.
So they test the virus on Mickey until they can until they can find a cure that works. So that's quite a few Mickeys that went out.
Yeah, because the book's called Mickey 7, whereas the film is 17.
Yeah.
I do wonder if they thought 7 sounds too much like it might be a sequel.
Yeah.
Mm.
So maybe we need to up the number a bit. It's clearly not a sequel to Mickey 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and 6.
Yeah. We then get to Mickey 17, who, as they finally cure everything, gets out onto the planet and then gets left behind, falls down through
She's where the film actually starts.
Onto a crevasse.
Timey-wimey. That's where the film starts, and then the first 20-30 minutes is in flashback.
Sort of, it's flash forward. Then you get the flashback to how
he got out.
Started.
Yeah. Hitches a lift on the back of one of the vehicles patrolling the area, gets back on board the spaceship, which they haven't disembarked from yet. They're all still living on the ship. Gets into bed to find Mickey 18.
Yeah, they assumed he was dead and printed a new one.
Which apparently is a heinous crime and against the law.
It's hardly his fault, though, is it?
It's hardly his fault, but he's persecuted because he didn't die.
He's a multiple. There's a bit of a backstory, which I'm sure the book goes into more about the scientists who created this printing machine. One of them was a serial killer who copied himself at least twice.
Using it as an alibi.
So he'd go on serial kill. Again, rather dark humour.
Yeah. It also turns out that the life forms on this planet, sort of big multi-tentacle snail things.
Yeah, hairy snail type something. I don't know. Yeah, aliens.
Yeah. Is actually intelligent.
Yeah, some kind of hive mind as
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, they're intelligent as the same way dolphins are intelligent, i.e. man thinks they're more intelligent because they've built their cities, poetry, work and war, and dolphins think they're more intelligent than man for exactly the same reason. It's not that level.
Yeah.
So long and thanks for all the fish.
Yeah. Of course, the higher-ups, the powers that be, see these snail things as a commodity to be exploited.
Well, the wife of Ruffalo's character
yeah.
wants to turn him into sauce.
Yes. Yeah.
She has an obsession with sauce.
Yes, yeah, garnishes sauce and yeah.
condiments.
And yeah, so for some reason they get a rockin, slice it on two, and which two of the creatures are in there.
He's going to create a nice polished thing to put the names on.
A memorial.
Yes, all the first generation of colonists are going to go on this rock.
They kill one of the creatures and then take the other creature, and I won't say test it, but they certainly cut off bits off of it.
Yes, to make sauce.
To make sauce, yeah. To which basically creates a war and gets the other snails to not necessarily attack the ship.
Creepers, didn't he call them?
Yeah.
Creepers, yes.
Yeah, to make their presence known.
Yeah.
And it's up to Mickey and, the security guard, what was her name?
Oh, Nasha?
Nasha, that's it, yeah.
Yes.
To try to defuse the entire situation.
Of course, we've got two Mickeys at this point as well.
Yeah.
Up till now, Mickey 1 through 17 have seemed...
placid.
All very similar.
Yeah.
That you could see them being the same person. Yeah. And 18 is completely
something,
different character.
Something happened in the reprinting, because 18 has much more of anger issues, shall we say.
Yeah,
he's much more motivated.
There is a sequel to the book. I don't know if that goes into this a bit more about clone drift or whatever.
Yeah.
There's an interesting story there, perhaps, they didn't go into.
Because it's been replicated so many times, there's been a slight degrading.
The
numbers have slipped slightly.
Yeah, because obviously he has to update his memory back up fairly regularly. He seemed to have to go into this freezing chamber as well to do it. I don't know. Or was that just...
That was some of the medical testing.
Oh, was it?
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Another scene, or scenes, that did make me smile slightly, was where he's being printed. Even though it's a 3D biological printer, it still acts like an ordinary computer printer, where the page sort of goes back in slightly, then it starts coming out again.
Yeah. During the flashback sequences where they forget to put the table there and it just flops out onto the floor.
Occasionally, they do ask him what it feels like to die.
Yeah.
I suppose sometimes he has been attached to the memory uploader while he's died, I'm not sure. Most of the time, he won't remember it.
Because that bit...
He's lost,
because that's the overlap.
Mm.
And you've also got his bestest buddy, who basically stiffs him. Forges his papers and actually gets a job as a pilot.
Timos on that.
Yeah, and a little bit of a drugs runner as well. You know,
it's all his fault that they're here.
Yeah.
They are on the run from
the mafia.
Cartel type thing, yes.
Apparently lent them a lot of money so they could open up, a macaroon?
That was it, yeah. Macaroons were going to be a big thing.
Yep, bigger than burgers. Yep.
I think there's a lot of interesting ideas they didn't really go into that much. Got two versions of Mickey there.
Yeah.
They're clearly different people. There is some talk about Mickey 17. If I die now, I'm not going to come back to life.
Yeah. You'll lose these memories. So I won't.
Yeah.
It won't be me.
But I would have thought when there's two of them alive at the same time, it's more obvious, should be more obvious to them that they don't come back to life.
Yeah.
They are dead. Somebody else with your memories and your personality wakes up.
It's a completely different person. It's not.
Yeah. They didn't go into that too much.
It would be interesting to get a hold of the book, see how it varies from the actual.
It's quite fun to see some locations, because it was all shot in the UK, as you can tell from half the cast of British.
Yeah, there was
one of Patterson.
Yeah, the mascot.
Yes.
He's been in Taskmaster.
Oh, okay. And he was in See How They Run.
Yeah.
The guy dressed up as a chicken for some reason. Quite work out
why. It was first season of Taskmaster with Potato Gate. Yeah. They had to... Sorry, I'm going to digress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They had to lob a potato into a golf hole.
Oh, yes.
They weren't allowed to step on the red carpet, so it was a good, 10 feet?
Probably, I don't know, yeah.
It was a good lot. A
couple of metres.
A couple of metres, and he just walked up, whomp, and done it in one hit.
Mm.
And it was perfect. He went crazy. He's running around the actual set, you know, saying this was the most perfect moment of his life. This is what he's lived for. And then they replay the thing again.
Oh, yes.
And you see the tip of his foot touch the red carpet, and the whole thing just comes crashing down.
Oh, no.
He crawled on his knees to the taskmaster saying, please don't take this away from me. It was fun. It was fun to watch.
Yeah. Another person we might recognise is Holiday Granger, who, do you remember that ITV thing called Demons? The thing with Glenister.
Oh, yes.
Glenister.
Yes, yes.
She played Ruby, the main character.
Ah.
Yeah, Demons. That short-lived ITV attempt to do a Buffy-type thing.
One season, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do remember that. Yes.
I remember Demons.
Yeah.
And also, I don't know if you recognise, but the place they leave Earth from, or they sign up, is the old London Assembly building.
Yeah.
It's got those stairs around the inside.
I recognise that. I couldn't place it, but I recognise the stairs.
Yes, the old GLC building, yeah.
No, sorry. The one that came after that, but they've now moved again.
It's known as the fencing mask. Yeah.
Right, is it? Okay, I don't know what it's officially called, by the scoop.
That's it, yeah.
So interesting to see some of those locations.
Because you only saw the inside of it, so there's no relation to where it was. But I recognised the inside of it, but didn't know where from.
Yeah. It's not done well at the box office.
No, unfortunately.
So we can probably not expect to get the sequel.
Yeah.
So if you want the sequel, read the book. But it's probably a good idea anyway. Read the first book. Be interested to see how they compare.
And catch it on streaming, because it will be streamed.
Yeah, definitely worth catching on streaming.
Yeah.
We come with our frozen hearts, right here, right now, forever and ever. Amen.
One thing we haven't done yet.
What?
Cloned ourselves?
No, we've had coffee. We've had something to eat. We've played the games.
There's three heads over there, but not necessarily cloned.
Three heads are better than two.
After three. One, two, three.
Hello, head of Pertwee.
Handles. Inky McSquirtalot.
Dinky McSquirtalot. Various nebulas.
Graham.
Moomin.
Terence. Dave Zilla the Mighty.
Oh, yes.
Dangerous Churchill. Oh, yes. Nazi Spock. A whole plethora of nebulas.
And goats.
Goats and Velmas.
Mm.
Yeah. And Hedda Pertwee got to have a photo with...
Oh, Hedda Pertwee, we got to have
Joe Martin.
And
Susan Twist.
Yes. Ooh. Hopefully they'll be going up on the Facebook soon.
Yes, I must get it scanned in.
Certainly Joe Martin had a very... Like many people, has had a very uncertain smile while she was holding it.
She did. Yeah.
An uncertain smile. And
what have I gotten myself into?
Very, very good price, too, those photos.
Oh, yeah.
Far better than those at London Comic Con and what stuff like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I would say it's time for feedback. But unfortunately, we don't seem to have any.
Oh, no. Don't you love us?
Well, I hope everybody's okay.
Yes. Oh, God, yeah. I hope everyone's okay at the moment.
Let us know you're okay, particularly at the moment.
Yes, by writing to us at show...
at...
staggering...
stories...
dot...
net.
Woo.
Well... Well, yes.
In that case, it's just down to one thing.
Mm.
Lead us out crumbly.
And so, dear listeners, that brings us to the end of another podcast.
Yay!
But never fear, in the next one there'll be more fun, frivolity and jollity, more news and reviews, more who, new and new.
Ooh, new.
So until that...
M for Mickey?
Why not?
Mesmerising.
Metal.
Magnificent.
Meandering.
Mickey.
Comes malevolently.
Molestingly.
Mincingly. Towards us. This is me, Crumbly, saying, be seeing you.
Goodbye.
In ancient times, cats... were worshipped as gods.
And so they should be.
They have not forgotten this. You have been listening to Staggering Story Podcast Series 1, number 469, featuring Adam J. Purcell, Andy Simpkins and Keith Dunn. The views expressed here are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the other speakers or the site. No copyright infringement is intended, and this is an El Presidente production for www.staggeringstories.net.
Anyway, without further ado, presidential... Yeah. I'll say that again. I'm just thinking of a sort of proper word I could use.
Anti-disestablishmentarianism? No. Ooh, let's get that out of the way.
Okay. Mm.
I do believe we have reviewed this before.
Really?
Mm. Yeah, The Whispering Forest.
Okay.
Can't say I recognise it, but perhaps, although it'd be...
quite some time back. Yeah.
Quite some time back. And did we do just the one or the entire trilogy? I don't know.
I think it's just that one.
I know I've heard this before, but there again, because I've listened to them a couple of times. So
let's have a look. Not that it really matters now, because...
Yeah, it's too late now.
We did.
Oh, my God.
We did all three, apparently.
Oh.
We did Cobwebs, Whispering Forest, and Cradle of the Snake way back in 2016.
Ooh. 9 years ago.
No. I can't say I remember it at all, was there? Mm-hmm.
When I started listening, so I thought, hang on a second. Oh.
We should check this thing more often.
Should do. Talk to my anxious self.
The name rings a bell. Holiday Granger.
Yeah. Demons.
After three. One, two.
Do that again.
Yeah. I'm not sure what many outtakes there, but...
sorry.